Welcome to Visible by Numbers with your host, Allison Bachman.
Hello and welcome to Visible by Numbers, being broadcast on beautiful BBS Radio, the number one radio station on the internet. This is your host, Allison Bachman, and I'm happy you decided to join me this evening. I'm not only delighted, but I'm very excited to bring you tonight's guest, Philip Smith. His book, Walking Through Walls, a Memoir, has become one of my personal favorites, and I am being serious here because I just can't even begin to describe in words how much I love this book. And this book has appeal on so many levels, whether you're simply interested in a very well-written and very humorous story of Philip's life, or if you're interested in gaining insight into the work of his incredibly gifted father. This book emphasizes spiritual truth and speaks of miraculous healings, connection to spirit, and gives us a glimpse into a world few of us will ever experience. And I got to tell you that I actually wish I could go back in time and be adopted into this family and live the life that Philip experienced, but I am ever so grateful that he decided to write this book and to share the intimate details of his life with us, because at least I got the opportunity to live vicariously through him by reading the book. In Walking Through Walls, it's an astonishing memoir, much of which is based upon the actual audio tapes and testimonial letters of his father's incredible healings, and it is my absolute pleasure to welcome Philip Smith to the show. Hi there, Philip.
Allison, that is the most wonderful introduction I've ever had in my life. Thank you. That was very kind of you. Thank you.
Well, I am, you know, because I interview a lot of people, and a lot of people have books, and I read a lot of books, okay? And I picked this book up, and I have to say, it is rare. I can't count on one hand how many times I've picked up a book, started reading it, and I did not want to put it down. I was pouting when I had to go back to work, or pouting when I had to do something else. I just wanted to sit and veg and read this book. It was so interesting to me. I can't even begin to tell you how many different places. You're a wonderful writer, and you are hysterically funny, really.
Thank you, thank you. And I'm not even really a writer. You know, I'm really a painter, but...
Oh, I beg to differ. I beg to differ. Hello? You wrote my favorite book. You're now officially
okay.
A writer.
Okay, I'm a writer.
I'm a writer. Come on now. Well, Philip, I guess for me, okay, because... You know, I started off my journey with numerology, basically studying biographies. I loved biographies. I loved the stories of people's lives. And so, and also when you think about numerology, it's very spiritual, and I'm totally into spiritual philosophy. So now I got a book that's a biography. It's spiritual. It's got everything I could possibly want. It was like a kid in a candy store. And like I said, I couldn't put it down. So, you know, why don't you take a moment because, well, first off, before you take your moment, I wanted to tell everyone that's listening to the show that you can go to the website for the book. It's www.walkingthroughwallsthebook.com. And you need to go there, and you need to just kind of peruse what Philip wrote there. There's a video on there. There's a place where you order the book. And I don't even care if you leave the show and just go order the book, because you must have this book. It's that good. But make sure you visit that. It's www.walkingthroughthewallsthebook.com. And it's an amazing website, but also, you know, it gives a great deal of insight into what this book is all about. So now, Philip, I guess maybe I'll start off by, you know, I got that the general premise of why you were writing this book is kind of to explain your childhood and your father's work at the same time and how this all influenced you growing up and what you've become as a person. And I know that, you know, as a kid growing up, my father embarrassed me quite a bit. You know, there was times when he drank a little bit too much, but I got to tell you, it doesn't compare anything to what you had to deal with. So maybe you might want to start off by explaining who was your dad and what did he do, and how did this kind of influence you as you were growing up? And, you know, this is the basis for the whole book, right?
Yeah, exactly. My father was, back in the 50s and 60s, he was a well-known interior decorator. I mean, he had incredible clients like the president of Cuba, the president of Haiti. He had worked for Charlie Chaplin, Dean Martin, Walt Disney, General Motors. I mean, he was a glamour guy. And,
yeah.
You know, my mom and my father, they'd fly down to Havana and go gambling for the weekend. They'd go for a weekend in Ocho Rios. I mean, Palm Beach. They were jet setters in a way before they had jet setters in the 50s and 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And very interesting guy, and really liked to make life beautiful for people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he really loved the idea of being surrounded by beauty, and
mm-hmm.
not superficial beauty, but really, you know, beautiful things. And then one day, literally one day, he discovers that he can talk to dead people and heal sick people. And from that moment on, our lives totally changed. Basically, in a short order, he gave up work. He never charged for his healings. I mean, he did them for free
mm-hmm.
because he felt that he was given this gift, and he had to share the gift. And basically, the book is about this incredible change that came over this man, our family, me, and you know, we went from living, you know, with custom-made suits and lots of jewelry and weekends in Havana, basically living kind of above the poverty line, and our house became like Lourdes, where people would knock on the door in the middle of the night with a baby that was blind or sick, or, you know, a sister who had leukemia, and my father would take care of these people, and he ended up healing, you know, thousands and thousands of people
mm-hmm.
in his lifetime.
Mm-hmm. How old were you when your dad took this turn from being this incredibly gifted interior designer to becoming an incredibly gifted healer?
It was progressing, but I would say it really happened. I was around 14, just in the time when I'm being a pain in the butt teenager, and you know, I want to sneak off and do what I want to do in private. And you got a psychic dad. He knows what you're doing, where you're doing it, and everything you shouldn't be doing. And you come home, and he just reads it right out to you. And I basically was like the transparent guy, like those little models that you had in science.
Right, right.
He saw right through me. And
you couldn't get away with anything, could you?
I could not do anything. And as a result, I'm a pretty honest guy now.
Well, not only just the fact that, okay, you can't get away with anything because Dad knows. And not only does he know, but he comes in and he says, I know what you did. Okay,
yep.
But let's just talk about, okay, how do you deal with being a teenager, which I'm thinking, these are years where you're trying to fit in, peer pressure's pretty tough.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're trying to figure out your own way. It's a very confusing time to begin with, just being a teenager and going through all of that. But now you've got, you know, this, it sounded a little bit like a circus going on at your house, where your father certainly was channeling dead people. People were pulling up, you know, in wheelchairs. And, you know, I mean, and it had to have felt like, oh, my God, I can't believe that this is happening. And what happened to that life I was living, you know, a few years ago, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was basically the Addams Family. I was living the Addams Family. And for me, you know, as a kid growing up, things like Bewitched, the TV show, or
sure.
I Dream of Jeannie, those were reality shows for me. I thought, you know what, that's kind of like my family. And, you know, Leave It to Beaver and
Not
Father
so
Knows
much.
Best, forget it. Those were aliens. It was the weird stuff. Mr. Ed the Talking Horse, you know, I thought, well, you know, that could be possible. So My Mother the Car,
yeah.
I mean, all of that was... Yeah, that's just like what I come home to every day from school. And it was definitely weird. And what made it more problematic is, aside from me being a teenager, and, you know, we're talking the 60s, and I'm
sure.
trying to fit in.
Sure.
But the police started harassing my father
sure,
for practicing medicine without a license.
Absolutely.
So what I learned is, when I leave the house, my lips are sealed. As far as I'm concerned, I don't know what my father's doing. I think he sells insurance. I don't know. You know, that's what it's like having, you know, your father's a mafia guy, and you know it, but you can't tell them at school. So basically, I lived a very schizophrenic life.
I came home,
loved my dad, respected what he was doing, was very interested in it. But when I left to go to the outside world, listen, I was 12 or 13 years old, and I told my teacher at school, my father's doing yoga, and she said, what's that?
Oh, my God.
That's the world we were living in back then.
Right, back in that time, it certainly wasn't something that is readily accepted as probably now, which is the beauty of now, is that it's much more open and much more discussed, and it had to have been very difficult, and your dad did take a lot of slack from a lot of the stories. Mm. I had to laugh. There's a couple of things. When your father, what was he called it? Senpaku?
Senpaku.
Senpaku.
Yeah.
Your dad announced that you had Senpaku. He had it, and it was toxic, and you thought you were going to die, and he put you on a macrobiotic brown rice diet, amongst
mm-hmm.
other things.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the whites of his eyes, because you could see him or something below the eye line or something?
Yes, yes.
I'm telling you, I have to say, I got up from my book and went and looked in the mirror. I was like, oh, dear, what is that? I have to say, right to the mirror. Gee, I wonder. But I can't imagine, like, you know, now he's changing your diet and he's telling you got to eat this because, you know, you got to clear the toxins out of your body. And, of course, I loved your mother. Mm-hmm. I loved your mother.
Oh, thank you.
She was going to smoke her cigarettes and drink her drinks and eat whatever the heck she wanted to. And okay, fine by you, Lou. You can, you know, don't scare the kid.
Yeah, exactly.
And I loved your mother. I loved her hanging in there.
Oh, thank you.
I loved your description of your mother. Absolutely. I mean, you know, from the way that she dressed and her airs and, you know, how she pictured herself and what her reality was as compared to what was going on in her house. Seemed to me like she kind of went off into a little world of her own, you know, because it must have been hard on your parents. It was hard on their marriage, this whole transformation with your dad. So it affected you on so many levels, right?
Yeah, it was not, again, if this was happening in 2009, you know, I think I would be at school and I'd say, hey, Jimmy, hey, Barbara, you want to come over to my house? My father's going to cure some guy of cancer tonight. You want to come over and watch? They'd say, yeah, cool.
Yeah.
But if I said that when I was a kid, it's like, is he like the devil? And believe me, the police would be there in 2 seconds. So it was hard on all of us. It was very hard on my mom because she had married one guy,
mm-hmm.
and all of a sudden he became someone else, and she tried really to keep up with him. But the problem was, really, our house became like an emergency room, and he was like an emergency room physician.
I know he was.
And, you know, people coming at 3 a.m. and the phone calls, and it was like, it was pandemonium.
Amazing.
Because back then, also, people forget, I mean, there were no MRIs, there were no CAT scans, and doctors had x-rays, they had some blood tests, some very simple blood tests, and a bunch of penicillin. And so, basically, the people who came to see my father were the ones that the medical profession sort of gave up on.
Right.
And so, these were people that had their last chance, and it was my father, and they came with real desperation.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, he was able to help them, but it was emotionally draining for everybody.
I'm sure it was on like I said, on so many levels. But it's still somehow mixed in this story, which is it is your story. I mean, there were hysterical moments.
Mm-hmm.
The part where you're talking about how your father, when he was shopping in a grocery store, would get out his pendulum and he would check up the fruit to see if there was any pesticides on it or if it was what his body needed or if it was ripened just right or had enough nutrients in it.
Right.
I mean, I can imagine your dad would say, come on, son, let's go to the grocery store. And you're like, no, that's okay, Dad.
No, thanks. You go and the people would stare at him and it would be, you know, as you said, I mean, it's normal that teenage kids are embarrassed by their parents. I was humiliated. It's
mm-hmm.
like, what is this freak show going on? And everybody's staring. Who is this kook with this little glass bead holding that's spinning over a cantaloupe? And, you know, but the problem with all this is he wasn't wrong.
He wasn't.
Always right.
Right, he was. That's what I think your dad may... On so many levels at that time, it just didn't make sense. But really what this book does, especially for me or anyone that has studied holistic healing, that has studied even the law of manifestation, the law of attraction, anyone that's studied anything having to do with spiritual philosophy, when you describe the things that your father did, his things that he wrote, the things that he felt, the things that he believed in, you know that it's spiritual truth there. It's sitting there in black and white in the pages of the book. He was a man ahead of his time. I think, you know, just if we were just to take, for instance, that your father felt that his work was based upon physics, that everything on the planet had a vibration,
mm-hmm.
that everything is vibrating at specific rates,
mm-hmm.
and that every one of these vibrations can be measured. Okay, we're talking numerology right there. That's
correct.
What numerology is based upon. And when we talk the numbers, when we're talking about people's, you know, we're talking about their energy. We're talking about their vibration when we're talking about the numbers. And so, to me, I'm like, well, you could have put numerology on the front of that instead of your father's work. But
correct.
He was very case specific. I mean, he would look at organs and what do they vibrate to and what is this supposed to be vibrating to and how can I make the adjustment? How can I return it to, you know, health or optimal functioning? And this method of healing is certainly, you know, what is being used and practiced on so many levels. There's so many different avenues of holistic healing right now. It makes your head spin. But it's all based upon, you know, much of his work and what he was doing at that time. You know, there was specific references to thoughts become things. I mean, come on now. You know, the plethora of books and information that has just come out within the past 2-3 years
mm-hmm.
on thoughts becoming things, quantum physics, it's just mind-boggling how much information is out there now when it, you know, just wasn't. And yet your father... You know, this is part of what he's talking about in this book. You know, another thing that struck me rather strongly was your father felt it was very necessary, and he was compelled to keep records and journal and write down all of his work. And, you know, that sounded very Edgar Casey-ish to me, you know, like it sounded like something Edgar Casey would do. And you know, I don't know, I just feel like he was a man, his legacy... You know, in his work and what he was doing. I mean, it is a legacy, but it's so represented today in all the books that are out there. It's mainstream, and yet I'm sure that your father still has got a lot to say on the subject. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's interesting. Everything you say is correct, and I did a book reading back a couple months ago when the book first came out, and... this woman sort of raised her hand afterwards. She said, well, I studied with your father. He had a small group of students.
Mm-hmm.
And she started talking about my father. And we recently did we went and we taped her. And she talked for about an hour and a half about my father. And she said kind of exactly what you said. She said about thoughts or things and energy and all these things she learned from him. She says, look, today we call it the secret. We call it this. We call it that.
Mm-hmm.
And she said... Lou just did it, and she says, I don't know where he got this information from, because it wasn't in a book at the Barnes & Noble.
No.
He got it somewhere, and he was channeling this information, and he didn't sort of brand it in a way and call it anything, but everything you're seeing there now is stuff he was talking about basically 40 years ago.
Exactly, exactly. Well, let's talk about who he was channeling, first off.
Mm-hmm.
Arthur Ford is best known as the founder of Spiritual Frontiers Fellowship, and I know
exactly.
that his teachings are being taught at the Arthur Ford Academy at Delphi.
Correct.
He also was a very renowned psychic medium who was probably best known for delivering Houdini's message from the grave to Houdini's wife, which,
correct.
You know, that was a test that Houdini, you know, created prior to his death, you know, because he didn't believe in psychics and mediums. That's pretty heady company. Your father knew him in real life before he died, and in fact, they were best friends. First,
yeah, time. That's correct.
But after death, Arthur still communicated with your father, right?
Several times a day. Like it's like, you know, you have an old girlfriend that calls you up for every bit of advice. My car's broken. This that.
Mm-hmm.
Arthur was like basically in my father's face 4, 5, 6 times a day.
Right. And he blinked the lights 3 times to let your father know he was coming through?
Yeah, and, you know, it's interesting because I mean, I lived with that, and it didn't matter if we were having, you know, breakfast at Denny's, or we were driving home on the expressway at night, or even if we were in a movie theater with those little kind of little baby lights along the pathway. When Arthur wanted to communicate with my father, he would blink the lights three times, would be the stutter, and I would see it. And, you know, sometimes we'd be in a restaurant, people would, like, look around, because in South Florida, you know, because of the heavy rains and the hurricanes, the power's mm-hmm. always going out. So mm-hmm. so people are kind of looking around like, is something going on here? And, you know, it wouldn't. And they'd go back, and my father would say, oh, Arthur's here. And he'd take out a pen, and he'd start writing down something from Arthur. And it could be that my father and I were having a conversation, and one of us wasn't getting our point across, or there was something Arthur wanted to butt in and add. And he would just make his point. But more importantly, he formed a kind of correspondence school for my father, where he would teach him these exactly. new healing methods.
That's where your father got a lot of his information.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Arthur would come, or he had another guy, Chander Sen, and they would come and they would tell him. For example, he'd have a patient at home, and all of a sudden one of the guys would come in, and they would direct my father to get up and go outside into the yard and pick a certain flower or a certain leaf and come inside and have the person either hold this or put it on a little sort of sending board that had magnets and copper coils and send the energy of this plant to them to help them feel better. So mm-hmm. he was in constant communication with these guys.
Right. And your father not only healed people in the physical, standing in front of them, but he healed long distance too, anywhere.
Yes. And in fact, he did a lot of work on the phone,
mm-hmm.
but he also, he dealt with not just our physical body, but we have several invisible energy bodies,
sure.
the etheric body, the mental body, the astral body.
Sure.
And he would diagnose each one of those bodies because he said, for example, in the etheric body, he would diagnose that, you know, someone wasn't feeling well, and mm-hmm. they'd come to him, they'd been through all the tests at the doctor, and the doctor said, I don't know, there's nothing wrong with you, but the person really didn't feel well. And the physical body would check out, and then my father might check, let's say, the etheric body, and mm-hmm. he would find maybe that there's cancer developing in the etheric body, and it's about to enter the physical body.
Sure.
So what he would do was treat the etheric body, because that's a heck of a lot easier to correct the energy in the etheric body before you get to the physical.
Sure.
So he saw these different bodies, which, of course, medicine doesn't acknowledge, but I think they will eventually.
Well, I think that they've pretty much just come a long way as far as proving the auric field and mm-hmm. proving that there's energy centers around people. I think they've come a long way with that from
right.
back in those days, actually proving these things. And, you know, quite frankly, I believe that right now that they're right on the cusp of actually proving a lot of these healing the modalities scientifically through science. I mean, it's we had a guest on our show, Leo Kim, who told me that he currently is in contact with heart surgeons and that they actually are doing an experiment. It's simultaneously being carried out across the United States that that consciousness is still present even after death. And there's an
wow.
experiment that they're running. And this is going to prove, you know, some of the scientific, well, the spiritual philosophy, a lot of the things that have been taught, you know, that's hard to prove. I mean, that's one of the difficulties that it is proving it. But, you know, there's a lot, I think, that's going to come forth. I mean, especially as we continue moving on, where holistic healing is just going to stand side by side, I think, besides what the kind of medical profession is doing now, I think that the holistic healing is going to be just as important, if not more important. And I think your father's work is really important. I do want to tell you that, you know, I have some friends that actually attended Delphi, and when I was spreading the word about your book, they were so incredibly excited to read the work about your father and read this book, and because, you know, they studied Arthur's work, and so they were just fascinated and very, very grateful, you know, that I had tipped them off to your book.
Thank you.
And I really think that, like I said, if you were just looking for a really good read, a really good entertaining book, it stands on its own mm-hmm. as being a very entertaining book to read. But if you're a healer, like we have a lot of people that are in the listening audience that are Reiki healers or, you know, some kind of modality that they work at. There's people that work with pendulums. I had one lady that I discussed the book with. She bought it. She was halfway through it, and she works with has been working with the Pendulum Olive, you know, for the past, I don't know, 9 or 10 years. She was very excited to read the book. But it's if you're out there and you're just, you know, studying spiritual philosophy and you read this book, there's so much truth in what you wrote in your interpretation of your father's work and what you have to say about your father's work. There's so much validation for what, you know, is believed. And that was, so on more than one level, the book has tremendous merit, and I was really kind of blown away by it. I mean, it's a fabulous book, really.
Oh, you're so kind, and thank you. I mean, I think it's, you know, I worked on the book for 6-7 years, and I really wanted to make my parents come alive. I wanted to make sure that everything was accurate, you know, and I listened to all the audio tapes. I would transcribe them and look at his diaries and, you know, read the letters that people wrote. But I also wanted the book to be enjoyable for exactly the reason is that it's one thing to talk, to preach to the choir, so to speak. It's
sure.
Like, you know, yeah, I'm there with you, Philip. I believe in these healing modalities. I believe the pendulum can diagnose, et cetera. But what's more importantly is how about all those people that are tied up mentally or emotionally and are unwilling to realize the more spiritual, energetic side of themselves? How do we bring them, you know, how do we enlighten them, so to speak? And
right.
I thought if the book is at least, and it is, I mean, listen, you could have done this very seriously or funny, but it as a 14-year-old kid looking at my father dousing, you know, the cantaloupes in the grocery store, sorry, but that's funny.
That was funny.
You know, but it makes people, I think that we've gotten a lot of people who have opened their eyes. And one thing I'm very grateful, and you'll when people read the book, they'll see that my father wanted nothing more than to work with medical doctors and share his information
right.
discoveries. And they treated him like a dog. I mean, they would call the cops on him. They called him cuckoo. They'd walk out on him. They'd
mm-hmm.
insult him. And now I personally know of about 8 or 9 doctors who have read the book and said to me, Philip, you know, I'm rethinking medicine based on reading this book about your father. And I
sure.
just start crying because I say, you know what, Pop? Your work is living on. They're listening to you. They're finally listening to you. See what's happening. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'm so proud of him.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would be very proud of him. As I said, I was reading it, and I was like, well, I don't know if you know anything about numerology, but 7 life paths, we're just like little magnets for information. We love all that stuff. I, you know, and that would be like, you know, a 7's dream to have that kind of a dad, right? Instead, you know, I got the Irish loudmouth, you know, kind of heavy drinking, you know, construction worker, you know, it wasn't a picnic, but, and I would have loved to have, you know, a dad that was teaching, you know, because your dad taught you. He felt that you were
yeah.
a healer.
Yeah.
And he was trying, he taught a lot of that stuff to you. That would have been a dream for me. I would have been one happy camper. Although I can imagine going to school would have been a little difficult, but I would have really enjoyed it. But let me ask you, when you were sitting in the pile, which on your website, there's literally a picture of you sitting at a desk with piles of manila folders, and I'm sure that's the tip of the iceberg. When
oh,
you
yeah.
when you sat there, and of course you had your father's records before you, and you know, you knew that you're going to start plowing through that and began that journey, what was that like for you?
Boy, I've never been asked that question. That's an interesting question. You know, I was honestly, I'll say, I knew it was an important story. And I knew that I really wanted to tell people about my father, but I had a lot of doubts that it would ever get to where it got, because it's a daunting process to go through all that stuff and to make it interesting. And then, you know, you're in the hands of total strangers that are holding your baby and trying to sell it.
Mm-hmm.
And believe me, the publishers, the answers you get from them, I mean, one publisher turned us down. They said, I said, well, why? They said, well, we really enjoyed the book, but you know, your father's dead. I said, yes, that's correct. Well, you know, if he's dead, he can't appear on Oprah.
Oh, for God.
And that is the truth.
That's the truth? Oh,
that
my
is
God.
The truth. And so it's a daunting process. But,
right.
you know, I think that if we have time very quickly for one story, what's interesting, when I the publisher, Simon Schuster, bought the book, and it went through the cycle. It gets, you know, copy edited and proofread, and it mm-hmm. goes to the art director, and it goes to the production manager. My editor, who is such a lovely man, Peter Borland, said to me, I've been here 16 years. And he said, I have my favorite people, the favorite proofreader, the favorite copy editor, but I'm not in control of that. Corporate, you know, sends the book here, sends the book there. Your book has landed on the desk of every one of my favorite, uh-huh. best quality people. And I said, hey, don't look at me. I'm not doing it. It's Pop who's doing it.
It's Dad.
Yeah.
Well, I know that we've got a caller, and I'm going to get to our caller in just a second, but you know, even in the very thought of entertaining this process of doing an interview with you, I was kind of like envisioning, you know, your dad pulling up a chair, maybe Arthur sitting next to him, and them hanging out, chilling, and listening to the interview. I'm sure that he very much is, you know, got his fingers working in your life even now.
Oh,
but
no question.
I do think I heard a beep, Philip, and so I'm going to check because I think that we have a caller into the show. So I'm going to ask who's calling.
Hello.
Hi, can you speak up because I can't really hear you?
Okay, sure. I'm calling to find out if there's a healer. Let me tell you my situation. My brother is suffering from schizophrenia, and it's been going on for years, but the medication doesn't seem to be working on him, or he refuses to take medication.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, is there anything we can do for him? Is there anybody like the author that you're talking about, his father, is there anybody like that that can help him?
Do you know of anyone, Philip?
You know, I don't know of any healers. It's not something that, you know, I was spoiled by my father, but let's not give up hope. You know, there's, let me talk a little bit about antidepressants and medication for schizophrenia. You know, there's a study that came out, I guess, a week ago that antidepressants generally, at least 50% of the time, are no better than placebos. And I would like to see you try a nutritional approach. Do you have an internet connection?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Can you write down there's a government website? It's from the National Institute of Health called PUB, PUBMED, www.pubmed.com.
Okay.
And I would like you to go there and type in schizophrenia vitamins, because there's a lot of research on things like omega-3s, the fish oils, that they are finding that when given, for example, to depressants with really severe depression that are not being helped by medication, that the fish oil actually enhances the effect of these drugs, and they're much more effective. Or there are many other studies about fish oils that, for example, can really help modulate depression without any medication. And I think there's a lot of nutrients out there. There's also a company called Life Extension, and I think it's www.lef.org. And if you can actually, they have protocols online for nutritional help written by doctors for various diseases, everything from kidney disease and diabetes to probably schizophrenia. And I'm just thinking that I would like to see him helped nutritionally, and I just don't know of healers. I've been to some. I've not been that impressed. I think my father was, unfortunately, you know, really, really unique. But I think that there's probably a lot of nutrition that you can do that can help mitigate. I'm not saying cure, but can help this condition.
Okay.
Okay, thank you so much.
You're welcome,
and
dear.
God bless you. I hope it works out.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome, bye-bye. Dear. Good luck with him.
Thanks.
I think that just, you know, I think that unfortunately, and I think when you say that alternative medicine is going to be complementary medicine standing side by side, what's happening is I think that doctors and certainly patients are realizing that we're reaching a limit. We're reaching a wall because mm-hmm. you can throw all the prescriptions, and there are very good medicines that help people and save a lot of lives. But a lot of times it doesn't. And, you know, to throw up your hands and say, well, I've written you three prescriptions. I'm sorry, go home. Well, the human body and the human mind is much more miraculous, much more complex.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, medicine in this country is basically like 100 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And you have something like acupuncture or herbs that are 5,000 years
exactly.
old. So there's a lot of ways, and I think that there's a lot of avenues that you can approach, anybody should approach with their health. And I think anybody who's sick needs to be very proactive and not just give up responsibility and say to the doctor, I'm here, write me a prescription, cut me
exactly.
open, fix me.
Exactly. I couldn't have said it better myself. And I think that, you know, on so many levels, too, that what I feel is that we tended to nurture this physical body of ours. We pamper it. We certainly feed it. We clothe it. We, you know, but there's also the spiritual body. And, you know, I think that, you know, even if it's 15 minutes a day to check in with your spiritual self
yeah,
and
absolutely.
Do, you know, your meditations and just, you know, work on that aspect of yourself, because you can't ignore that part of you. And, you know, that helps you on every level, every aspect of your life, from your emotions, your relationships, your job, centering yourself, balancing yourself, helping yourself to handle whatever comes along your way in life. Why would you not nurture the inner you and just constantly working on this physical thing? I mean, all the exercise in the world isn't going to help. You know, you've got to work on the spiritual aspects as well. And, you know, vitamin therapy and all that stuff, you know, your father went into flower essences, I think, a little bit in the book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and speaking of the book, well, maybe first off I'll give some numbers out in case that there's somebody out there that wants to call into the show. I just want to give the numbers first, okay, Philip?
Sure.
And then I'll ask my next question. If you're listening to Visible by Numbers, to my wonderful guest, Philip Smith, who is the author of Walking Through Walls, which is the biography of his life with his growing up with his dad, Lou Smith, who was an incredible, miraculous healer. It's just an amazing book, and we're talking to Philip tonight. But, you know, maybe you've read the book, and maybe you've got a comment or two, or maybe you have a question for Philip, and I'm sure he would be delighted to hear from you, as I would too. So I'm going to give you the numbers, toll-free, 888-815-9756. And it seems like BBS has been real busy because we got four other call-in numbers here. So you can also call in 530-776-5185, 530-413-4511, 530-876-3222, and 530-876-9916. And if I said that too quick for you, you could just look at the front of BBS, bbs.com, and look for the numbers for Station 1. And if you got a question, you want to chit-chat, if you read the book, hey, call in. We'd love to hear from you. So getting to the next question, which I kind of want to keep you all to myself, but anyhow, do you have plans, you know, eventually to, I mean, I know that you try to get the essence of your life and put it into this book and infuse, you know, a personality with your mother, yourself, and your father. And certainly, it was a funny tale. I mean, I laughed out loud, and it was so lovely to hear me laughing.
Thank you.
Of course, my dog thought I had lost my mind, but I'd be sitting there just laughing at something I read. But, you know, there's all that work. And, you know, on your website even, I repeat the website for everyone to definitely go there, www.walkingthroughwallsthebook.com. On the website, you know, you actually have papers, pieces of paper that you took pictures of.
Mm-hmm.
What did you call them? I don't know. There's just a whole bunch of them.
There's messages. There's
yeah.
letters, and then there's these sort of drawings.
Drawings and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
And to me, you know, I was studying that, and I was thinking, God, I would love to have access to read, you know, a lot more stuff of what your dad had written.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, so there is a demand, I guess, for you know, people that in the metaphysical community that would probably benefit a great deal
mm-hmm.
from access to your father's work. Have you thought of, it's probably an undaunting task to put that into a book. I don't know, would that be volumes? But have you thought of that, Philip?
Yeah, but, you know, I'm sorry, let me just jump back to the woman who called in, and I hope she's still listening.
Sure.
One of the things my father really believed, and yes, he was very talented at what he did, but he believed we all had the ability to heal, that he was no more special than the person next to him. It's just he developed it more. And I really want to encourage this woman to, and this may sound a little corny, and she may be, you know, it must be such a hard situation to live through, but I really want to encourage her to, as you said, Allison, just take a few minutes every day and pray for her brother. And my father always saw every patient that came to him in wellness and rather than like the disease. And I know that with relatives, I've been able to pray for them and, you know, help their blood sugar and just do a lot of things. And I think that everybody can do this. And I just hope she's still listening, and I really want to encourage her. Even if it looks like it's futile and it, you know, it's not helping, it is helping, and it's the best thing, one of the best things she could do. So, back to the so many people have asked me. In fact, it's literally every day.
Mm-hmm.
What are you doing with your father's papers? Are you doing another book, et cetera, et cetera? At the moment, no, because it is an overwhelming task.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think, so. I mean, we're in the thousands now of people who have asked for this material. And I think that there's, because my father did have classes. I mean, they were small. They were 3, 4, 5 people, and, you know, maybe he had 2, 3 classes a year. So he really taught maybe 100 people in his lifetime. But he taped them all.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there's a way, instead of just doing something like, Chapter 1, pendulum work. Chapter 2,
sure.
You know, laying on of hands. I think there's a way to do a narrative and really discuss these things, but in a story-like form. And, you know, I remember when my father took out his pendulum and did this, and in a way that would educate people, because people are learning a lot from this book. And, yes, I would like to do it because I just have a responsibility to tell my father's story and to honor him, and he wanted to make this change in people, and I think the book is helping, and so, mm-hmm. Yes, I've got to go on and do it.
Right. Well, you know that we, I'll share with our listeners that, you know, I had the, we kind of got into a chit-chat when I was arranging you to come on the show, mm-hmm. and you very kindly, I was kind of discussing your 3 challenge. I felt it in you, and I wanted to see if it was in your chart, so I kind of conned you into giving me your name and your birth date so I could look for the 3 challenge, because you were a little bit too humble, a little bit, you know, not feeling as comfortable being out in front of people as you should. And so, you know, I gave you a little bit of information of what I saw in your chart, which really, you know, in all honesty, Philip, you are here on a level that is here to help humanity. And you are the person that can be very organized and that can take something and organize it. It's kind of like called the master organizer. That's the actual word for the 22 life path. Master visionary, someone who, a master builder, somebody who builds something, puts it together, builds it in solid form, puts it on this earth, and usually it lasts long after that person is gone. And so you have tremendous organizational skills. And so, you know, I told you a little bit about you, and then we led to your dad, and so we kind of did his numbers. And, you know, the one thing that I saw with your dad is he's an 11 life path, so both of you are master life paths. And what the 11 says about a person is that they have an open door to the spiritual realm through which information flows, and that on some level there's things that occur to them in their life that becomes their truth. Usually it's something they're very passionate about. And it becomes something that they feel it's necessary and important to share, to help humanity, to share with the world. And the difference between you and your father is his energy is so connected sometimes to the ethereal realm that sometimes it can appear very ungrounded. It's more, you know, dreamer, not doer. And you're the doer, and he's the dreamer. And to me, I could see these two charts going hand in hand, you being... You specifically, your role in this lifetime is maybe to present your father's work to the world. And I was rather, not only was I charmed by both of your charts, but I was also humbled by them, because I love to see this kind of thing play out in people's charts. And I was very amazed at it. But you're multi-talented. I mean, we haven't even begun to talk about your artwork. And certainly multi-talented is in your chart. And I know that your art suffered because you were writing this book, but your paintings and the things that you've done are represented, the representations, I think, of your dad's work. There's, there's a lot of knowledge in those paintings.
Absolutely. Well, thank you. And I do want to say that that reading that you gave me was just so impressive. I mean, you're so talented, and you're very compassionate in the way you delivered the information. And I found it very enlightening to just, you know, it's always, in the times that I've gone to psychics and, you know, numerologists, whatever, or astrologers, I have friends who are very hesitant about going. I said, listen, you would gladly walk into psychotherapy for 15 years. And I said, spend an hour with one of these people, and you'll condense 15 years into this one session, and you'll really get self-enlightenment and understanding and a clarity about who you are and where you're going, where you've been. And it's such a great tool, and it's really, it's far more scientific, I think, than psychotherapy.
A little bit.
Yeah, I think you just get on there. I mean, and as you know, I mean, I'll share this. I gave a present to a friend to have a reading with Allison, who it was his birthday, and he called me afterwards and said, that was uncanny. How did she know that? So, and that's a huge compliment. So, no, but I think that these are important tools, and I think that what you said, all of that, my father's knowledge and growing up with this knowledge at such a young age and in such a different time has played a very important role in my paintings. They're kind of like mind maps in a way.
They're
these metaphysical hieroglyphs.
Oh, they are.
And they're basically self-portraits, they're autobiographical, they're always about my father. And what was interesting is when you asked me what was it like to start writing the book, I stopped painting because my paintings are about my father, and I was writing about him, and I just wasn't doing both.
Right. Well, I can see that where there's a tremendous value in both. I don't know if you can multitask your way through your father's work, but, you know, you're incredibly gifted on so many levels.
Thank you.
Listen, Philip, I think I heard another beep, so I'm going to check in and see if we've got a caller. Do we have a caller, please?
Yes, hi, this is Kathy.
Hi,
Kathy, how are you?
Doing really good. I'm enjoying the show, as I always do. And I want to let you know that I've ordered your book while I was listening to you this evening.
Oh, my goodness.
And I'm looking forward to getting it.
Oh, well, I hope you enjoy it. Thank you very much.
And I had to laugh when you were talking about your dad and stuff. I had a different kind of a dad, and there were six kids in the family, and he would line us up, and he'd say, okay, who's the person who did a particular thing, like steal the grapes out of the refrigerator or something? And he would go right down the line and talk to each one of us, and he would know without a doubt which one had done it. And
wow.
I used to sit there. I went to parochial school, Catholic upbringing, and I would sit there and think, somebody's got to tell the Pope God's alive and living on East 4th Street, because he always knew who did it. And so fathers have a tendency to give us an enlightenment, make themselves almost bigger than life.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really proud of you for taking your experiences with your dad. And like Allison had explained, that he was the vision person, and you are the doer. You are promoting at a time now where it would be even more acceptable to have a man like this walking among us.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to commend you for that, and I'm really looking forward to reading it. And for the lady that called in that was troubled with her brother that had schizophrenia, I've had a reading with Allison, and I have a daughter who has some problems. And the reading released me. I realized that each one of us come onto this earth with lessons that we have to learn, and
correct,
that my daughter chose to come onto this earth with some pretty, pretty hard stuff to have to take care of. And it helped me be able to remove myself, but at the same time, meditation every day, lifting that one up and asking that the universe and God just guide her in the right direction. So that would be my advice to that lady. And also probably get a wonderful reading from Allison. So I just wanted to call in and say I'm thoroughly enjoying it. I'm going to be getting your book. And thank you for everything you're doing. And Allison, as always, You're the best.
Well, thanks for calling, Kathy. We really appreciate you calling.
Okay, thank you.
And Kathy, you know, when you get the book, in there's the website, and you can actually. I'd love to hear from you after you read the book. Just let me know what you thought, and because
okay.
I love to hear what people thought, and so please drop me a line.
It takes a lot of courage to write a book. It takes a lot of discipline, organizational skills, and when you're doing it, you also want to do honor to the person that you're trying to present.
Yes.
So I can understand perhaps the turmoil and second-guessing that you might have had, but I'm really anxious because I think that you've done a wonderful job.
Oh, you're very kind. Thank you.
Right. Thanks, Kathy. Thanks for calling.
If I can tell a quick story,
sure.
When Allison asked me about, you know, what was it like to write the book, like I said, I wanted to memorialize my father. I thought it was the time, as Kathy said, that now it would be accepted, people would be interested, because he had, you know, passed away like 30 years earlier. And so I wrote the book, and I struggled with this book for years.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm patting myself on the back. Good boy, Philip. You did a good job. And about a week before I handed in the final manuscript, I found yet another folder of my father's messages from these spirits. I mean, there's thousands of these folders.
Right.
And in it, there was a message from 1971 from, I don't know if it was Arthur or Chanderson, one of his two spirit guides. And they told my father, and this is back in 1971, I'm in college, I'm not even thinking about writing a book, to please organize your papers because Philip's going to be writing a book and make sure he has everything he needs. Now, no one, I looked at that and I thought, well, I thought I had some free will in this, but obviously I had no say in the matter at all. And then to make matters worse, he also left behind thousands of these audio cassette tapes, and most of them are labeled. So one of them was blank, and I, you know, I picked it up. I thought, well, I'll listen to this. You know, I'm driving to the airport today, and I'll just pop it in. And it's an English woman, also in 1971, who says to my father in the reading, do you have a son? And he said, yes. She says, oh, good, because you need to get your papers organized because he's going to be writing a book on you. And I think it's like a documentary. It's going to be about what you do in your life. And he says, oh, that's really interesting. And she said, yeah, maybe there's like a video or a movie or something. But so I had nothing to do with this book. So, Kathy,
well,
thank you for the compliments, but it wasn't me.
It was a conspiracy, Philip.
Yes.
It was an absolute conspiracy. You know, I hope that, you know, the movie aspect, I can see this as being a fabulous movie. I absolutely can see this as being a movie I would love to go watch. So, I don't know, maybe you might be ended up writing a screenplay or something because it's just an incredible story. And I can visualize that. That would be awesome, wouldn't it?
Mm. It would make, my mom loved the movie, so it would really make her happy.
Make mom proud, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, then you'd have to pick out who's going to play you. You know, that would be the tough part. Who would play you, Philip?
I have I don't know. Me.
Okay, yeah, you go play you. Well, you have exceeded my expectations for this conversation about this book. I knew that, I was so... the high, and I guess that's the word that I would use, the high that I got off from reading the book. I was just unbelievably just giddy with how exciting the book was and just how much I got out of it and how it was just good times. Plus, there was a lot of knowledge in there, many, many insightful things. And having the opportunity to hang out with you and spend time with you was just, you know, on tonight's show, an absolute and complete bonus for me. And you said just as we came on, and of course we had to go live, you're saying that you're sold out, right? The book sold out?
Yeah, at least in South Florida and in New York City, some friends came in from Japan and wanted to buy a couple books as gifts, and they had to end up ordering them online because it wasn't around. And I know in South Florida, where I live, all the bookstores are out of it, and it's. I think the bookstores have to sort of special order at this time because I think people are reading the book.
Well, they should. Word is going to get out. The one person's going to read it and pass it on to another, and before you know it, you're going to have a bestseller, I hope, because this is just an extraordinary book.
Oh,
and,
you
know, I told you that the 55 minutes would just fly, right?
Yeah, I'm still waiting. I mean, it's like 10 minutes.
Yeah, well, it's done. I mean, we hit our mark. So I just want to remind everyone to please visit the website for the book. It's walkingthroughwallsthebook.com. And you can order it from there. If not there, on Amazon.com. And I just absolutely, wholeheartedly, from the tip of my toes to the top of my head, recommend this book. And so thank you so much for coming on the show. Really appreciate it. Love talking to you.
And this was great. You brought out the best in me. Thank you so much.
Well, I'm wishing you nothing but success with the book, and I want to hear from you in the future, okay?
Thank you, Alan.
You're right. Bye-bye, Philip.
Bye.
And everyone, thanks for joining us, and have a wonderful evening.
Thank you for joining us this evening. For more information, or if you wish to contact Allison for a reading, please visit www.visiblebynumbers.com or email Allison at alynch@ptd.net. Have a wonderful evening and be well.